Welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this half-hour talk show on travel. And I am really excited about this week's show. I have Graham Watson on the program, fresh back from the Tour de France. Graham has been photographing the Tour de France for almost three decades, and he is certainly very, very well known in the cycling world. I have Graham on the phone from London. Hi, Graham. Welcome to Travel Fun.
Thanks very much.
It's great to have you here, and especially, as I said, just fresh off the tour. In fact, I should say fresh off your motorbike, because you were on the bike. You were one of those photographers sitting on the back of a motorbike for the 3 weeks during the tour. So it's really nice of you to make time for Travel Fun. First of all, I have to say congratulations on your book. And that is Graham Watson's Tour de France Travel Guide, The Complete Insider's Guide to the Tour. It's a beauty.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
So how did you become the, I think we can say, best-known photographer of the Tour de France?
You're exaggerating, I think, a little bit. It's very simple. I was a photographer in London in the mid-1970s, about 1972, 1973. And, about 1977, I was a photographer in London, photographing portraits of royal families and aristocrats of Europe and England. And I started cycling to the work, about a distance of about 12, 13 miles each way every day, because I couldn't afford the train fare. And, I got into cycling a little bit, and I was a photographer at the time. And then in 1977, the company closed down. The couple running it retired. And I had all my options open, and I decided to try to become a cyclist. And I was useless, so I went to the Tour de France in 1977. And something in the back of my head said, Graham, you love this. You love photography. You love cycling. Become a cycling photographer. And that's basically how I got started. Put the two passions together and turned out to be a fantastic way of life ever since.
What excites you the most about the Tour de France, which to me is really one of the most interesting sporting events in the world, but I am a little biased being the Francophile that I am. What do you love about the Tour?
I think when I first saw it, I saw the colour, the excitement, the drama. I also saw the possibility, the potential to go and discover France, which is, as you know, you live there, and I live next to France, live in England. I'm their closest neighbour, and we're always fighting the French. And so when I went to see the Tour de France in 1977, I sort of sensed there was a more to France than we'd been told when we were in school and by our parents, and that the French weren't so bad, and France was such a lovely country. Go and see it. So your favourite sport is cycling. And France becomes one of your favorite countries to go and see, and the two together are the perfect companions.
And in fact, also, the tour is so incredibly international as well. It is more than a European event. Certainly, the Australians have a great presence in both in the Peloton and the spectators. And so there's that whole aspect, too. That's really fun.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've enjoyed so much is going to see the Tour de France when it was such a parochial French event, not even a European event, it was a French event. And people like me were, we still are in the minority, but we were extremely in the minority back then in the late 70s and early 80s. And just at that moment, it's only because of these people that my career really got off the ground. The people like Greg LeMond came along, the Irishman Sean Kelly, the Australian Phil Anderson. It's a story I tell people many, many times over, but it's true. Without them, without these non-French, non-European people, I would never have got my career off the ground at all. And since then, of course, the Tour de France has changed so much. It's much more an international event than a French event now. The French are there. You know they're there. They tell you they're there, and you can see them and hear them. But it's the non-French people that win the race and win most of the stages. It's become a very, very international, worldwide event.
What are some other ways that you've seen the Tour de France evolve over the past three decades?
I think it's evolved in the same way that the French life has changed. and perhaps not just French life, but you know, everybody's way of life has changed. People, wealth and needs to be, France still is still basically the old country it was, you know, a century ago, but they've grown into the modern world. Cycling's moved with it. The Tour de France has moved with that. More money is involved. It's more commercial. There's so many, many ways it's evolved, but it's never lost its charm and its character, and it still means the same to people today as it did 30 years ago.
You have experienced, I'm sure, many highs and lows on the tour. Tell us some of your high points documenting the tour.
I'm pleased to say that the high points easily outnumber the low points. The high points are just seeing my career grow alongside those of say Greg LeMond or Phil Anderson or Sean Kelly, and seeing people like not just Lance Armstrong, who obviously has a huge effect on the Tour de France still, but seeing people like Miguel Indurain mature into a fantastic Tour de France champion over 5 years, and coming in with him is all the Spanish character that follows these guys. When someone wins a tour 1 year, then next year, if it's a Danish cyclist or a German or a British rider or an Australian or an American or a Spaniard or Italian, he comes back to the race with a huge following of fans, and they transform the Tour de France into an even more multicultural event. They're the things, that, more than one specific thing, they're the things I enjoy the most, the constant changing of champions and the fans that follow them.
What about... I think we...
Perhaps I should say also, while we're talking about Lance Armstrong, certainly over 7 years of winning the tour, he was definitely my high point. And within that seven-year span, he had some fantastic wins. He had some fantastic challenges to overcome. And those are the high points. I think he's such a high-level, highly trained athlete. And he put everything into those Tour de Frances. And there's many, many high points in that. No low points at all.
What do you think about Lance coming back next year for the tour?
Next year, it's a very interesting question, because in theory, one more season of racing, he'll be a lot stronger next year at almost 39 years of age. On the other hand, some people say he won't be stronger next year because he will be 1 year older. It's a fascinating thing. He came back. He's such a brave thing to do, is to come back to the sport at all, let alone come back to take part in the Tour de France, let alone to come back and try and win the Tour de France. And Lance did the first two things very easily. He came back and he rode the Tour de France. The third thing was beyond him, which wasn't able to win it. And he showed a fantastic state of mind, like a character, I think he called it humility, in having a teammate beat him and him having to come third instead of first, because Lance likes to win, not to come third. And the way he dealt with it was another part of his character that will, you know, over the years, people look back and think, what a wonderful guy he was.
I can't agree with you more. I think, you know, what a beautiful thing. And he is a role model for many. I had the good fortune, actually, of meeting Lance on the eve of the Alpe d'Huez in 2001. And that's when I was following the tour. And I just happened to stay in the same hotel as the U.S. Postal team. So that was a huge thrill. Speaking of...
You chose one of the most pressurized stages for him to actually beat the Alpe d'Huez. He just won that one, I think. And it was a huge thing. What he did was probably one of his greatest ever stage wins in the Tour de France.
Exactly. It was the eve of it. And so the next day he raced on the Alpe d'Huez. And that night at dinner... Everybody from the U.S. Postal team, they're sitting around the table, and they had their pieces of paper in front of them, the graphs with the big spikes, and all that they were going to have to cover. And yeah, they looked a little bit tense, but then afterward I hung out some with Johan Bruneel, and he was good-natured. And so I guess he knew they were going to win. Their Lance was going to win that next day. So let's talk about following the Tour de France. That's so much about what your book is about. Once again, for anybody tuning in, I am visiting with Graham Watson. And Graham wrote this marvelous book, Tour de France Travel Guide, The Complete Insider's Guide to the Tour, where to stay, where to eat, how to get around, best spots to watch the race, how to meet the pros, how to photograph the tour, tour history, and more. And it really is a beautiful book. You have lots of photos in here. I imagine most of them are yours. And beautiful maps. And you do have history and all kinds of practical information. What inspired you to write this? I mean, certainly your experiences following the tour were the foundation, but to share all of this information with the visitor, with the traveler, what was the motivation behind that?
There were many, actually. I've written quite a few books on photography, on my own photography of cycling, and the last couple of years, for some reason, I've taken up cycling again myself. I used to be a cyclist way, way back years ago, and then I stopped because of this way of life is not good for riding a bike. You have to carry a bike with you, which is not always possible. So I did jogging and stuff for the last 20 years or so. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I said I took up cycling again. I don't know why I did, but I did. And it gave me it kind of sent me back 30 years when I used to ride a bike following the tour when I was very, very young. And somehow that's come together with my growing age, whereby as you grow older, you grow more interested in food and wine and everything else and less in other things. You actually become quite interested in what you're eating, where you are, and you take interest in things like historical things, which you never do when you're younger, when you've got a very focused mindset on photography. And I just found myself the last few years riding a bike, but also just getting more interested in architecture and the culture of French, not just French life, but all kinds of walks of life. And somehow I thought, well, it would make a nice book to tell people about how to follow the Tour de France, to just to let them think, yeah, go to the Tour de France, but don't just look at the tour. Go elsewhere, look left, look right, look around you a little bit, look at your surroundings, and realize there's a lot more to the Tour de France than just the bike race. There's France to see as well. I wanted to share it with people, I think.
So for somebody who dreams of doing that, following some of the tour, what would your best recommendation be? For example, would it be to just go to a few stages and then take in France? Or how would somebody approach that?
I think if I was to go back, if I could put the clock back 30 years, but have the luxury of having a car or something and staying in nice hotels, I would target either 3 or 4 days of the Tour de France on consecutive days in the Alps or the Pyrenees, and just really enjoy those 4 days. But make sure the next 4 days you're spending somewhere else in France away from the race, and just enjoying the country a little bit. To follow the 3 weeks is it's not everybody's cup of tea. I mean, it's a huge task, no matter whether you're driving a car or even flying in a helicopter. So 3 weeks is a long time to be traveling around one country. So I would go in, just target 3 or 4 days in the most preferred place you can see on the race route that year, and just make sure you enjoy yourself around those days.
And, of course, it's important for people to plan way in advance, because thousands or hundreds of thousands of tourists from all over the world descend upon these different stages. And in fact, even the roads are closed off ahead of time, or I'm sure hotels are pretty booked up. So do you tell people how to go about booking a stay?
Yeah, I mean, and obviously it's got so much use now with the internet. You can do everything months ahead, even a year ahead of the actual race being there, if you know the dates, when the stage towns are, you know, what the starts and finishes and things like that. The tour route is announced in October, like middle of October. And you can start planning from then on, which gives you, you know, I think at least 6 months before the race begins to book your hotels. It's not that easy in that the Tour de France takes huge blocks of hotels in the area where they are. But the internet allows you to do a pretty good search early on and get at least some of your stage towns organized, so you've got a nice hotel to go back to after the race. You can start this in October. It's great. And with the internet, you can just keep looking and looking and looking, and you can cancel your booking and try and find a place closer to the town where the race is. It's the potential is huge. It's much easier than looking at an old a hotel guide, a Michelin guide, or a Loge de France guide. Now you can just do everything online, and it takes a lot of the headaches away.
One of the sections of your book covers how to meet the pros, and that was something that impressed me the most when I went to the Tour de France, aside from just happening to be in the same hotel as the U.S. Postal team, but how accessible they were to average visitors. Would you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I think some teams, I think cycling is a very modest, we'll call it a modest sport. Yeah, these guys ride their bikes on open roads and they do meet and greet the public, and that's part of their enjoyment of the race, let alone their obligation to a sponsor or to the public. They actually are, you know, they're one of us. They mingle with us, they talk with us, they actually take an interest in hearing from people who watch the race. They're very open-minded. You know, you can't always walk into a hotel and go into the dinner room with the cyclists, but by and large, you're part of their life, they're part of your life, and they'll be happy to sit out in the foyer and sign autographs and things like this. It's part of their... They're quite mature people. They're not superstars that hide behind, you know, in a stadium where you can't touch them. They're as much one of us as we are of them. They're very open-minded.
And I think it's important to say that at the beginning of each stage, they have the team buses set up, and the cyclists are sort of circulating a certain amount within a somewhat confined area, but there is interaction with the public at that point right before the stage begins.
Yeah, I mean, there are some very secure areas in the Tour de France where you can't get near them, but at some stage they have to come out of their team buses and they have to, you know, go through the crowds of people to make it to the start line. So there's that chance of meeting them. Your best chance also is actually after the finish, because they have to come out of the secure zone where they finished in and again ride to the team buses. And, you know, even cyclists who've ridden 125 miles one day will often stop and sign an autograph and say hi to somebody because they appreciate you being there.
I am visiting with Graham Watson, author of Tour de France Travel Guide, the complete insider's guide to the tour, and also renowned cyclist of the Tour de France for almost three decades now. Graham, would you like to provide your website?
Yes, my website is very simple, www.grahamwatson.com.
There you go. Okay, so a lot of people are curious, including myself, about how it really works for you sitting on the back of the motorbike for about 3 weeks, capturing all these different shots. And I have some questions for you about that. Okay. Somebody here from the radio station wanted to know how you managed to get back and forth through the peloton.
Okay, well, it's very simple. You just drive your motorbike past the cyclists. There's about 16 photographers' motorbikes on the tour, which sounds a lot, but there's about 250 photographers on the Tour de France, only 16 on motorbikes. And those 16 motorbikes, they spend the whole day squeezing past the cyclists. You know, whenever they can, when it's safe to do so, we squeeze past. Sometimes we go past very quickly. Sometimes we take 10 minutes getting past. It depends on the size of the road and what the race is like. And so you're very much part of the peloton. Really, you become a cyclist without having to pedal.
Do they have any special requirements on these motorbikes and on the team cars for the exhaust? Because sometimes I see the cars and bikes right in front of the cyclists and pedaling up a hill or whatever, and I think, oh, how can that person breathe?
Yeah, sometimes there's a lot of cars and motorbikes, but these guys actually like the fact that there's cars and motorbikes there, because they can actually use a bit of get some pacing off these vehicles. So you never hear any complaints. And also, most of the cars and motorbikes these days are the most modern ones you can get, so they're pretty clean compared with the older cars and motorbikes.
And do you always have the same driver with you on the motorbike?
Yeah, I've had the same driver with me on the Tour de France for about the last 20 years. He's actually Spanish. In fact, he's Basque. And so he's my most regular, my best driver. He's the best driver I've ever had.
Because driving the Tour de France in and of itself is a little bit hairy at times, and I think I might have seen in your book there actually was a photo where I saw someplace where a motorbike went off the road covering the Tour de France at one point in the history.
Yeah, I think back in the 60s they always have some crashes every year, but this was a particularly bad one. They drove over the edge of a ravine and both of them died. Both the driver and the photographer, actually the radio reporter died. In those days, of course, they had no crowd, barriers lining the road. So when you went off the road, you went down a long way. There was nothing stopping you. And in those days, they didn't wear helmets. They didn't wear any protective clothing. So you were very much more exposed than you are now.
So it can certainly be hairy from the back of a bike. Are there any unwritten rules between the motorcycle riders and the cyclists?
There's written rules. We get given a guide to what we can and can't do, which you have to read and acknowledge you've read it so you know the rules. There's many of them. It's all basically safety. At all times, we have to give priority to the cyclists. If they want to suddenly move into your path, you have to slow down or stop, or you have to get out of their way. We also have to give way to most of the officials in the race driving cars and also driving their own motorbikes. We're quite a way down the pecking order in the whole of the peloton, but equally we have fantastic access to the race. There's no better job to be had than being a photographer on a motorbike in the Tour de France. It's the best job there is. But yes, there are rules we have to stick to when we are doing our work.
You probably need a massage just like the cyclists do at the end of the day.
Actually, I don't. I've been doing it so long, it's literally no different to someone going into their office and sitting at a computer all day. Although if in my next life I came back to photograph the Tour de France, I'd have my own masseur with me. I'd have my own cook. I'd have a helicopter pilot flying me around. I'd have a very different life. But for now, I don't need the massage. I'm doing okay.
It sounds to me, from what you were saying earlier, that you are a Francophile. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, I'd admit to being a Francophile. We, as you know, the Brits love and hate the French just as much as the French love and hate the British. But no, I love the country, and all the French people I've met, I love them as well. So, yes, I'm a Francophile.
And do you travel to France outside of the Tour de France?
Yeah, I do. I do other races in France during the season. We do one called Paris-Nice, which is obviously from Paris to Nice, and a few one-day events in the north. And also I try and take at least a week in the pre-Tour de France, a week in France, just going cycling and just hang out doing nothing. And also I can do another week in France at the end of the year, like in October, because you come across so many wonderful things in France, hotels or castles or chateaus or all kinds of things. You know, you know yourself what you find in a country when you're traveling around there, but during the Tour de France, you don't have time to stop and look at it or enjoy it, or even stay in one of the nice hotels you've seen. They'll be booked up by the Tour de France. So often I go back, and I actually go back to the places which I couldn't stop at before because the Tour de France is too busy in July, it's summertime, and you know, there's too many people around. But I love to go back to France in the autumn when the leaves are changing colour and the hotels are still open, and you know, you get very spoilt by some wonderful French hospitality.
Do you have a favorite region of France?
No, I have many favorite regions. I couldn't really pick on one. It depends on the time of the year. I can't just say there's too many regions I love. They're far too. I suppose if I had one, it's probably the Auvergne, the area of the Massif Central, which is the most remote. I think it's the most remote area of France, and it's unspoiled. It's remained unspoiled in the 30 years I've been traveling there. It's just a wonderful place with, you know, lush green meadows and, you know, these volcano tops. And it's a great place. It hasn't been overcome by tourism yet.
That is a beautiful area of France. They refer to it as La France Profonde, France, and indeed it is. I have been visiting with Graham Watson. And Graham is the author of Graham Watson's Tour de France Travel Guide, The Complete Insider's Guide to the Tour. And it really is a beautiful book. So I recommend it if you have a love for the tour, and particularly if you're contemplating a trip to France for the Tour de France. Graham's website is grahamwatson.com, and I'm sure so many of your photos are going to be appearing in the press in the weeks, in the days coming up, days and weeks, and all kinds of publications. So people are probably admiring your work almost as we speak. Graham, is there anything you would like to add?
Now we've spoken pretty broad. I'd like to know your knowledge of France because it probably outweighs mine. I was very nervous when I wrote the book because, you know, I'm a photographer. I know about cycling and I know a good bottle of wine from a bad bottle of wine. But there's an awful lot I don't know about France, and there's a lot of experts out there who could be really critical about some of the things I've said about the food aspects of France or the culture of France or the people. I would like to have contact with people that know France better than I do, so I can actually learn a bit more about the country. But it's a book I wrote that it kind of skimmed the surface. It was a guide about many things, about how to photograph the tour, how to see the tour, how to get around, the food, the wine, the culture, the people. But it skimmed the surface of every aspect of that. And so it's to be taken seriously, but not too seriously.
Okay. I have to ask you, have you ever been to Telluride, Colorado?
Actually, I have, yes. I haven't. I've been to Durango.
Yes, to visit Bob Roll, probably.
Yes, yeah, Bob Roll and someone else whose name escapes me. And I used to spend a lot of time in Boulder visiting friends up there. So I know the area quite well, but never actually been to Telluride.
Well, you must come to Telluride. Honestly, it looks like the Alps, the mountains that we have here, the San Juans, and it's just about 2 hours up the road from Durango. So you must do that.
Skiing was that Telluride skiing? Is that where it comes from? Telemark skiing, or is that?
A Telluride ski resort is here, and it's a great mountain, and of course, a lot of people do Telemark. Yes, so we look forward to welcoming you in Telluride and hopefully not too far off either in the winter season or summer season. Graham, thank you very much for being a guest on Travel Fun.
A pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.